Hi, this is Tiffany the Last and guest pirate Sherry, and we're on the phone with David Yetkin of Hot Lips Pizza. Hi, David.
Hi there.
How you doing?
It's a great day.
Great. Is it raining up there?
No, actually, it's beautiful. We're actually going to have a week of sunshine.
Great.
Wow.
Hot Lips Pizza was founded in 1984 and has four family-owned restaurants in Portland. It not only stands out in the community for its great food, but also for its sustainable practices. And that's really what we want to talk a lot about today.
Dave, you and your company have taken many steps towards sustainability since 1984. Can you describe that progression for us? What's the history of sustainability and Hot Lips Pizza?
What really happened in the early years of Hot Lips was just trying to keep the doors open. And then getting into the 90s, it was actually 1994, my wife and I, Gina's the co-owner of Hot Lips, we had our first kid. We've got two kids. They're now 11 and 13. But it was in 1994 where we really went through an evaluation of what are we doing with our lives, what's our responsibility to our kids and to our community. And we started to realize that Hot Lips was a really great interface between business, community, family, environment. Restaurants are a really unique place where people come to work, people come to eat. You're building a facility that uses lots of resources. Day in and day out, you're burning natural gas to cook pizzas, electricity. All these things have a huge impact on the environment. And we realized that it would be solve a lot of things for us. One is it's kind of taking on the green and sustainable mission is a huge challenge intellectually. It was really cool to try and think of solutions for these problems. It made us feel like we were empowered. We had some way to make a positive world community for ourselves and our kids. It was also at that point we heard a presentation by the Natural Step Network, which is a really good, clear explanation of how to evaluate our actions and their impact on the environment. So it was really in 1994 that we started what I call the sustainability quest. And at this point, I'd say that Hot Lips is a green company on a sustainability mission. So when we first started looking at this, we thought, okay, well, we'll work on sustainability for a year or two, and we'll get that, and we'll move on to the next thing. And as we started getting into it, realized that there's a lot of questions that still need to be answered, that sustainability is something that becomes something you do for your life. It's not something that can be accomplished quickly. So I'd say right now Hot Lips is kind of in the green phase. We're doing lots of green things, but sustainability really means that a lot of changes, a lot of thinking, cultural changes need to happen, the way we do things. Probably the closest thing to a good example of that is we have a seasonal menu. Mm-hmm. So, for example, we feature tomatoes in August and July, August, September, when they're really delicious and we can get them locally. And then in the backside of the calendar in December, January, and February, we feature potatoes and kale and squash and more winter crops. We also work on facilities. For example, we try to construct our facilities with hard surfaces that could be cleaned with soap and water instead of, for example, vinyl floors that need to be stripped and waxed that use toxic chemicals. We look at the way we lay out the functionality of the store. For example, a walk-in serves multiple functions. Customers can grab soda or salads out of one side of the walk-in. Another part has our beer taps. Another side of the walk-in has a man door in there so the pizza cook don't want to get their cheese and sauce and stuff like that, instead of each station having its own refrigeration. So if you combine the three functions into one walk-in, you've cut your energy consumption by two-thirds. You've cut the maintenance of the equipment. You've cut the amount of coolant that you need by two-thirds. And you've cut the amount of heat that goes into the room by two-thirds, which also reduces your need for heating and cooling. We also try and create a place where people want to come and eat so that we'll cut back on the need to do deliveries. But in the case of deliveries, we started buying smaller cars. We used to use pickup trucks because we could use the truck loading zones all over town. But we started using subcompact cars, and then we started buying, we've got 5 electric delivery vehicles. And we also launched a bicycle delivery program, which you can imagine is pretty difficult in the rain to get somebody out there on a bicycle to deliver pizza.
I imagine it is. David, let me ask you, since you brought up your customers, let me ask you this question. Why should we as customers, as consumers, care whether or not our food is local?
Well, I think the most immediate thing is that I really believe it tastes better. When you grow food for its qualities and nutritional qualities rather than its shipping qualities, you can't help but make a better pizza. That's one part of it. The other part is we're clearly moving into a time more expensive energy, more expensive fossil fuel, and food that's sent a long way is going to cost more. So buying local helps preserve local farmland and local processing. When you're buying food from someone locally, they take a lot more interest and pride and care in the product, that, you know, the food that they're growing. Mm-hmm. So I've seen it with wheat farmers. We have direct relationship. We buy wheat directly from farmers in eastern Washington. They actually come and visit me about every 6 weeks or so. I've got one of my wheat farmers in here visiting. And I know for a fact that they use less pesticides in and on their farms, and they've increased the soil health, vitality of the soil, which also gives their thing has got more nutrients in the food. So when you have a one-on-one relationship with your farmer and they know who's eating their food, they take a lot more pride in it, and it's just grown better. Mm-hmm. So it's more likely to me, it seems more likely that someone far away and anonymous is going to not have as much concern about what the environmental and nutritional impact of their growing practices are. So it's really multifold.
Yeah. I haven't been to many restaurant websites that list the source for all their ingredients, and a lot of people might think that it costs much more to buy from select suppliers. What's the reality?
Well, here's two things. One is that I can't say that it's cheaper. I have got to say it does cost more. But we pay, worldwide, we've got the cheapest food in the world. And one of the reasons it's cheap is we've taken shortcuts in growing our food. And it really, you got to look at what are the long-term impacts. If you're not growing food for nutrition, what's the long-term impact on your health? Mm-hmm. So, I want to take a more long-term view. B, there's the second part is that there's when you're eating seasonally, and I've seen this with tomatoes, for example. If we're buying tomatoes in July and August when they're less expensive, and we're not buying them in December when they're more expensive, sometimes 2 or 3 times as expensive, and as a matter of fact, they don't taste very good because they're shipped, they're basically red potatoes. They're very starchy, unflavorful things. So we're buying kale and potatoes and squash that are less expensive. So there's savings from the seasonality side. There's actually another example where this has happened twice that I can recall, once with lettuce and once with tomatoes, where I've had long-term agreements with farmers to buy lettuce, and there was crop failure on the larger commodity market, mm-hmm. and the price of lettuce shot up, and everybody wanted to buy from my local supplier. My farmer comes in and says, hey, we have an agreement. I'm selling you the lettuce at the price that we agreed on, because I know when this crisis is over and all these people are offering to pay me two or three times the value of my crop, they're going to disappear, and I know that you'll still be there because we've honored our agreement. Mm-hmm. And the same thing's happened with tomatoes, where I've seen California tomato crop fail because of frost, and the cost of tomatoes shot way up. But my local supplier didn't raise his price because we had a long-term agreement that works for both of us.
Yeah.
So the other thing that's happened, and this is really the advantage of being an innovator, is we don't advertise very much. A lot of our, the percentage that would go into advertising goes into food. And being an innovator gives me opportunity, for example, to have interviews with you and get the word out, and the goodwill that it buys with the customers, it's a lot more valuable than the advertising dollar, putting an ad in a newspaper or in a magazine. Mm-hmm. So we offset it a little bit that way. But I think it's a mistake to demand cheap food.
Yeah. Well, David, you have had some press lately, of course. One of the articles that actually you reference on your website was Fortune Magazine, Mark Gunther, Fortune Magazine.
Uh-huh.
In an article, he talked about Hot Lips Pizza and your sustainability practices. And he's got a great quote in the article. He says, Portland, of course, is not America, and Hot Lips is not Domino's. And I love that. I think it's a compliment to both Hot Lips and Portland. But Portland is a unique environment. Could your business model succeed anywhere else?
Well, you know, what's amazing to me is how far the dialogue worldwide has gone in the last few years. We've been at this since the 90s. And as recently as two or three years ago, I had to spend a lot more time explaining what the problems were, you know, global warming, resource issues. On Focus the Nation Day, I did three presentations that day, and the level of knowledge of high schoolers and college kids was amazing, way ahead of where it was just a few years ago. And it's clearly appearing to me that this is a worldwide trend, and this is the way business will have to be done in the future.
David, we've read also that you have no ambition to go national or even regional. What are your plans for the future?
Being a privately held company, we can take a much longer-term view of our investment. When you have a publicly held company, there's really a lot of pressure for short-term return and keep the stock price up, have a higher. If you go out and get venture capital, you have fairly unreasonable interest you have to pay on the loans, and that puts a lot of different pressure on return for the company. So expanding beyond what we can manage and finance would change the philosophy of the company, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, there's one more thing I want to say
is that
we didn't invent this all by ourselves. We've got a lot of input from many, many different people, other chefs from the city, a lot of environmental support services. And really the obligation is to share our knowledge rather than to privatize it and make people pay for it. So one pizza place or one pizza company in one place making changes is really not going to make a significant change. This is information and a way of doing business that everybody's got to embrace, and then we can move towards a truly sustainable world.
One of the reasons that we were asking that question previously is that a couple of days ago we had heard that Honest Tea just sold 40% of its business to Coca-Cola, stating that it was to expand and grow the business. Now, is something like that anything you would ever consider doing?
We've seen that over and over again. And, you know, Portland's had a lot of companies that have grown up and sold out to national corporations. And there's really a sense of loss in the community. You know, I can understand the exit strategy. You know, people want to retire, and you know, who are they going to sell their company to? Or we have a big guy come in. For example, if you're a potato chip maker, and there's not much barrier in the as far as the way you make your product, and somebody big comes in, they can just outdo you just on sheer scale. Mm-hmm. And it becomes real difficult. But I think that one of the things that we're doing is trying to put out as high a quality product as we can, and it's really handcrafted. And to me, it's kind of a barrier against a big guy coming in and trying to crush me, because they really can't afford to do business the way we are. I think the solution is lots of locally owned companies where, you know, the people that run them are in the community that they're doing business. I mean, really, if you think back, those are the people that have supported the Little League teams and the, you know, the soccer teams and schools, are people that are invested in the community.
You guys are the real deal when it comes to local and sustainable, obviously. But it can't be easy. Do you foresee yourself one of these days just, as you said, retiring, exit strategy, just getting so tired, you know, saying no one really cares about this and you're out?
Actually, there's a few good answers to that. One is, when you talk about, you asked me earlier about profitability. Part of profit to me is having a right livelihood, getting up in the morning and wanting to go to work. So we're hugely profitable in that. I get up in the morning and I want to go to work. Same with my wife. But our hope is that, you know, we've got two kids, they're 11 and 13, that they'll grow up and want to take over the business, or we'll sell it to the employees. Mm-hmm. But I think that if I woke up one day and everybody's doing this and there's no value in going and doing what we're doing, that would be a fabulous world. Wouldn't that be a great thing if everybody was doing it?
Yeah. You know? Well, thank you, David, for your time. And we're piratepods.com, and we like to ask the people that we interview to give a pirate R or pirate impression or joke. Could you do that for us?
At least I've got a pirate joke, but I don't think it would be broadcast.
Oh, you can tell us it. It's all right.
Oh. No, I can't do it.
Okay.
That's not a good thing.